Blog Talk Radio.
Today, you can claim the life you were meant to have. This is All the Way In Radio. I'm your host, Deborah E. Lake, and I'm here to help you recognize, claim, and live fully in your life. It's easy to find people who will tell you you can't, but success and happiness only come when we reject you can't and fully embrace I can. The philosophical foundation for All the Way In can be summed up in the advice of my father, who told me to let the words of my critics roll away like water from a duck's back. So clear your mind and open your heart. Enjoy me. You'll be glad you did.
Hi again. This is All the Way In Radio. I'm your host, Deborah E. Lake, and I've got a great show, as usual, for you today. We're coming to you the whole month of February for Valentine's Day and lovers. As you know, we're focusing with LGBT, bisexual, transgender couples and singles, and we're having discussions also about the legal aspects of same-gender love. With me today is my guest in New York, Mariette Geldenhuis. Mariette has her law degree from Oxford University, served as a city attorney in Ithaca, New York, and was a public prosecutor before. She started her own law practice back in 1997. Welcome to All the Way In, Mariette.
Thank you very much.
Hi, welcome. Good
Thank
to hear
you.
Have you and hear you. How are things in New York there?
Things in New York are actually less snowy than they are in Atlanta, so it's an interesting time.
Well, yeah, I guess so. I know you know that there's been a lot of talk about gay marriage, same-gender relationships, don't ask, don't tell, the works, you know, and a great deal
right.
of energy and sometimes insults, confusion, and all of that surrounds the subject. But what I'd like for us to do, and part of why I'm having this series, is to bring some clarity as much as we can and calm conversation about the topic so that people can they can be informed rather than inflamed. So I'd like to start with you just laying out the issues, laying out the legal issues.
Sure, I'd be happy to start with an introduction and, you know, please prompt me with questions
sure.
or comments
yeah.
along the way. I think centrally what this comes down to is that the way that our society is structured here in the United States and many other places in the world, that marriage is the central civil right. And that becomes very clear when you look through all the laws, not only in each state, but on the federal level.
Mm-hmm.
On the federal level, there's something like 1,500 rights that are linked to marriage. Here in New York State, where I practice, there are another 1,300 or so linked to marriage on the state level. And why that is important is because marriage is such a central part of how we structure our society, all sorts of rights and benefits are directly linked to marriage. So marriage becomes a gatekeeper for whether a committed couple has certain benefits and certain responsibilities to each other. And if same-sex couples do not have access to marriage, then they miss out on a lot of these things. Let me try and make it a little bit more concrete with a couple of examples.
Mm-hmm.
One example is on the federal level, income taxes. Now, this is the time of year where, unfortunately, all of us have to start thinking about filing our taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are a same-sex couple and you don't have access to marriage that's recognized on the federal level, you cannot file jointly.
Mm-hmm.
And there was recently an article in the New York Times that calculated over a lifetime comparing a same-sex couple and a heterosexual married couple. And due to tax and other financial disadvantages, the same-sex couple lost hundreds of thousands of dollars over their lifetime. So that's a very concrete example of how there is a disadvantage to same-sex couples. Another example that's often governed by the laws of every state, and this is a real situation that I'm dealing with in my practice right now, two women, a committed same-sex couple, one in her 30s, one in her 40s, the one in her 30s became seriously ill with cancer. They meant to, but never got around to making a will. And the woman who died, her mother was very hostile to her partner, never accepted that her daughter was a lesbian. So when she died, literally that day, my client was bereaved, grieving the loss of her partner at such a young age, and the partner's mother was there with a truck loading up all her deceased partner's belongings, because the mother was the heir under the law, and there's nothing my client could do. She just had to stand there and watch. Yeah. So these are the kinds of indignities, and I can mention many examples, but these are the kinds of indignities that same-sex couples suffer because they do not have access to marriage.
I like what you use, the word that you use, a gatekeeper. I like that. Could you say a little more about that, about how marriage is a gatekeeper for us as a society?
Mm-hmm. For better or for worse, in our legal structure and in our societal structure, marriage is seen as a measure of whether people have formed a committed relationship and have decided to take on certain responsibilities towards each other and towards their children, and therefore should have certain rights. Social policy encourages marriage. It's seen as a way to create stability in society where people are taking financial and emotional responsibility for others and also for their children. So the legal system is set up to support and encourage marriage.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you have same-sex couples who have the same commitment, the same wish to financially, emotionally, and otherwise support each other, if they cannot enter through that gateway, they have none of those benefits of being married. So basically, you create a whole group of second-class citizens who are not recognized.
Yeah. And one of the other guests, I think, said something about it being a marriage being a rite of passage to adulthood. And
yes.
Gays and lesbians and transgender people are not able to pass through that way. And the gatekeeper, I really like that. Yeah,
that's so important. You know, it's a legal issue, but it's also a social issue, a societal issue. Just that recognition from friends, from family, and that societal support for a couple that seriously commits to each other in a long-standing relationship. And when that is denied, it has many consequences, not only legal. But on the legal level, marriage has been recognized as a fundamental right under the Due Process Clause of the Constitution for as far back as we have reported cases. So it really is seen as not only a gatekeeper, but as a fundamental right to marry the person you choose. And by saying to some people based on their sexual orientation that they cannot marry the person they choose is really denial of a fundamental right and therefore a civil rights issue.
Yeah, and that's where we get lost. We don't focus on the civil rights part. We talk about religion. We talk about things like that and don't really focus on the civil part.
Right, and I think, you know, you hit on two very important words there, Deborah, civil and religious. And I think a lot of the opposition and sometimes the confusion around the issue of same-sex marriage is because people tend to conflate the religious and the civil aspects and not separate them.
Okay.
Because the state is in the marriage business. The state decides when people are married. It has certain rules and regulations about when people are married, and then has all these laws and benefits and regulations that apply to the status of being married. Religious institutions also have marriage, but it means something different to them. They have their own traditions, and each religion or denomination would have its own rules of recognition of marriages. But civil marriage is really separate from religious marriage.
Mm-hmm.
People can be civilly married but not recognized in their particular religion or denomination because of the rules of that denomination.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact of recognition of same-sex marriage as a civil marriage, as something that has to do with law and with government and with how the state treats its citizens, really is totally distinct from religious marriage, which would remain the province of each particular religious group. Sometimes I think that a better solution would be to say that everybody, straight or gay, would enter into a civil union, which would give them all the state rights and responsibilities. And if they wanted to be married, then that would be a matter for their particular religious denomination. Just to make it clear that there is a distinction between the civil marriage and the religious marriage.
Exactly. And I guess I'm wondering, and I have been wondering about this, why it's so difficult for us to do that as a country. Why is it so different? Because you can get, from my understanding, and I'm no lawyer, but you can get married in 10 churches as have 10 ceremonies, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as long as it's not recognized by the state, you don't have that little piece of paper, do whatever the state says do,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't exist, right?
Right. It doesn't exist in the legal sense.
Exactly.
Right.
So we
right.
have that already in place.
Right.
So what do you think gets in the way of people being able to say, okay, this is what we have, so let's live by it, you know?
Yes, I think it's when people have some kind of either preconceived idea, which often is linked to ignorance in the sense of not knowing people who are in committed same-sex couples and having some preconceived notions about that. And then people who have religious convictions to whom this is not acceptable. But as we all know, there is separation of church and state, and not all the laws that the secular government makes will be acceptable to each and every religion.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that the government can abdicate its responsibility to look out for the civil rights of its citizens. It's fascinating to me to see this develop in the United States. As you may know, I'm from South Africa originally.
Mm-hmm.
And in South Africa, same-sex marriage is legal.
Mm-hmm.
When the new constitution was passed in 1994, sexual orientation was included as a protected class, along with race, gender, religion, and many other protected classes.
Mm-hmm.
So South Africa went from one of the countries with the most institutionalized oppressive system in the world to being one of the leaders in civil rights in the world. And an important part of that is recognition of same-sex marriage and eliminating oppression on the basis of sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think if that can happen in South Africa, where things were so polarized for so long, it's hard to understand sometimes why it is so difficult to make that kind of progress in this country.
I grew up and was born, and I'm a product of this country, and I don't understand it. Either. As someone who is from South Africa, what kind of advice would you offer us, you know,
mm-hmm.
to get out of this maze of emotion and confusion about the topic?
In the end, I think one-on-one education is the most effective tool. Because if a change is imposed from above and people don't agree with it or feel that it reflects their values, then it only creates problems down the line, as we've seen with some other examples.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's so important that people be open about their sexual orientation, open about their relationships, and change minds one by one by doing so. It's interesting when you look at the demographics that between people between the ages of 18 and 35, this really isn't an issue. For them, it's just a no-brainer that there should be same-sex marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's in part because there has been, in recent decades, more openness. Most people in that demographic know somebody who's gay. Some have gay and lesbian parents or neighbors or friends, other family members. So the stigma or the fear has been diminished significantly by openness. So I think there needs to be this grassroots effort to help people understand that the gay or lesbian couple next door is basically doing what the straight couple is doing. They're going to work every day. They take out the garbage. They take care of their house. They go grocery shopping. They have children. They raise their children. They're concerned about the same things. So I think that is a very, very important part. But that can't be the only thing. We really do need to keep knocking at the door and pursuing this as a civil rights issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we hear a lot about complaints about activist judges and judges making law. And I think those complaints really are a misstatement of the checks and balances in our system. We have a federal constitution that enshrines these really important civil rights, and then each state also has a constitution which does the same, and there's some differences, but by and large, there are these due process rights and equal protection rights.
Mm-hmm.
And the courts are there to make sure the constitution is followed. So when people say, oh, the court should not rule and say that gay people are not getting equal protection, they should be able to marry, that the judges are out of line, that's just not accurate. They are doing their job. They are saying that we have a constitution which protects equal rights. We as the courts are the guardians of the constitution. This is not something that should be decided by a popular vote.
Yeah.
If you think of the history of discrimination on all sorts of grounds, race, for example, in this country, if it were left up to a popular vote at the time, nothing would have changed.
Mm-hmm.
The courts need to step up and say, no, we are not going to allow second-class citizens in this country. So I think it's a twofold effort, the one-on-one education of people, and then also keep bringing the cases to the courts to give the courts the opportunity to extend the protection of the Constitution to all its citizens.
Yeah, yeah. Let's take a little quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little about immigration, okay?
Okay, sure.
Just about 30 seconds.
Isn't that John and Rachel over there?
I thought they broke up.
Broke up? When?
A while back. John looks good.
Why wouldn't he? Who told you they broke up?
Rachel did.
Well, maybe she was just talking, venting.
No, Rachel found out John had HIV, and she was going to leave him.
What? HIV?
Yeah, she was worried that she had it too, but her test came back negative. I wonder what made her change her mind. Maybe...
What?
Well, when my brother told me he had HIV, he gave me a book. Said it would help us talk. You remember. The title was Your Neighbor Has AIDS.
Oh yeah, I read that too.
And when Rachel told me about John, I asked her not to make any decisions until she'd read it.
That was smart. That book helped you and your brother.
Yeah, and what I learned helped me talk with Mom, too.
You think that made a difference for them?
I'd bet money on it, and you know I'm not a betting woman.
But you are a great sis and good friend.
Your Neighbor Has AIDS by Deborah E. Lake is available at DeborahELake.com, Amazon.com, and select bookstores.
Okay, we're back, and we're talking about LGBT and the law. Well, let's talk a little bit about immigration.
Sure, yeah, this is, as an immigrant myself, this is an issue that's very close to my heart, and the consequences for LGBT couples can be just devastating. Just as like so many other areas, we've discussed a couple, whether you can bring a partner or spouse into the country if you're a United States citizen depends on whether you're married or not.
Mm-hmm.
So that, as we know, is the number one way that if you have a spouse or partner from another country, if you get married, you file a petition, and pretty much immediately they are granted immediate relative status and can move to this country. Now, just think if a same-sex couple is in that situation. You know, I actually have a close friend who is a lesbian and who is a lawyer in the state of Utah, which was no easy task, and she was fighting the good fight there, often under very difficult circumstances, and she met a woman who is a citizen of the United Kingdom. And they started dating, and they ended up getting a civil union in London. And they had a long-distance relationship for a while, but then decided they really wanted to live together. And my friend ended up giving up her practice and moving to England, where she's not even licensed to practice law, for the simple reason that in the United Kingdom, a same-sex partner can get immigration status, and in the United States, they cannot. So you can have a situation where, let's say, somebody comes to this country as a student, they meet a United States citizen, they fall in love, they want to be married, they want to be together. Ordinary situation, if they get married, very simple, the foreign spouse can stay. They happen to be a same-sex couple, then the person from another country's visa is going to run out at some point, and they're going to have to go back. So the couple will be forcibly separated by immigration law simply because they're a same-sex couple and cannot get married.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I have two son-in-laws, and they're from different countries. My daughters married men who were from other countries, and they came over to the U.S. One is here now, and the other one, they're coming in the next couple of months, I guess. And it's very interesting because it was no problem. They were married, and all he, like you said, all they had to do was fill out a few forms. But if one of them were the same gender, same sex, they would have had to make a decision, one give up one country or something. It's very, very interesting.
Yes, and it's just such a draconian and absolute result because sometimes literally the couple cannot find a way to be together. If neither of them is from a country that will allow immigration on the basis of a same-sex relationship, it could very well be that neither of them can get permanent resident status in the other one's country, and that could be the end of the relationship.
Yeah.
Which just seems so incredible in this day and age that that could happen. And again, I have a friend who's South African, lived in this country for 20 years. His partner is Australian, and they recently moved to South Africa, and my friend's partner, his Australian partner, immediately got residency rights in South Africa on the basis that they're domestic partners.
Hmm.
And
America needs to catch up, huh?
Yes, it's really interesting to me that I'm holding up South Africa as an example to the United States for civil rights. I never thought that would happen when I came here 20 years ago.
I have to tell you, it's quite interesting to me as well. I remember decades ago now, reading a book about the things apartheid in South
mm-hmm.
Africa, Kaffir Boy, and I was just struck.
Mm-hmm.
And the change and the difference, we're lagging behind now, you know. It's really mind-boggling when you think about it.
Right, and there's several other countries. Of course, Canada, right here on our border, where marriage is legal.
Mm-hmm.
Several countries in Europe, Spain, recently Portugal, the Netherlands, some Scandinavian countries, Mexico City recently.
Yeah.
Several South American countries either have or are considering civil unions and domestic partnerships. And, of course, it's not all bleak here in the United States. There are several states which now permit same-sex marriage, others which have civil unions and domestic partnerships. But part of the problem we're experiencing now in the United States is, frankly, the legal landscape for LGBT couples is chaotic. It's a real mess. Some states give recognition, others don't. So you could literally get in the car in Maine and drive across the country, and some states you're married, some states you're not, just depending where you are in the same country. And that just creates all kinds of problems, as you can imagine. And even those states where you can get married, like Massachusetts, Connecticut, Iowa, and others, your marriage is still not recognized on the federal level.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means is you can live in Massachusetts, be married, Massachusetts will recognize your inheritance rights, will recognize all the things that the state can control, but the federal government is still going to say, sorry, you're not married. Mm-hmm. So still, if you die, your partner will get no Social Security benefits, your partner's from another country that can't immigrate. All those federal problems persist, and you get even more bizarre problems in that if you file your taxes on the state level, you need to file married because you're married in the state, but on the federal level, you have to file a single.
Yeah.
But federal law usually says for tax filing, they follow the rules of the states. But in this instance, they don't. So clients end up filing this federal tax return with this long essay attached trying to explain why the state and the federal tax returns are different.
Right.
Yeah,
so
it's
the kind of stuff that I want to bring out. This really bizarre kind of stuff that's coming out of this whole debate.
Yes, you know, it's been this way now for really probably in the last decade. You know, before that, all of us who were practicing in this area, we were just working quietly each in our own community trying to come up with all the documents and ways to best protect our clients in the absence of any kind of legal recognition. And, of course, we still do that. Now that progress is being made, yes, it's very positive, but until and unless the federal government really recognizes the status of same-sex couples, we are going to have these kinds of discrepancies.
Yeah.
You know, now, one of the, I guess in a sad sort of way, one of the benefits of marriage is the ability to get divorced. What I mean by that is if people have been married and the relationship doesn't work out, there are certain rules and both people are protected in terms of how their property is divided and whether there's support payable between the two of them. When a same-sex couple splits, there's none of that, and you can have a very unreasonable result. But now one of the other things we're finding is if couples get married in a state that recognizes marriage, but then they go and live in another state that doesn't, some of those states are now refusing to give them a divorce. So now we have some people who literally it's forever because they can't get divorced, and they can't just go back to the state where they got married because most states have a rule that you have to live in that state for a certain period of time before you can get divorced.
Wow.
And also we have, you know, civil unions, domestic partnerships from a variety of states, and there's a huge issue about dissolving those. If you get a civil union in Vermont and you live in Michigan, can you go to court in Michigan to dissolve your Vermont civil union? Some courts have just said, what civil union? We don't recognize it. Yet Vermont still thinks you're in a civil union.
Wow.
So we have a lot of people out there now whose legal status is uncertain, and that creates all kinds of chaos in their lives.
Oh, my. You know, I hadn't even thought about that part of it. Yeah. With the different states having different, whether or not they recognize or not, and then
yeah.
What happens when you, oh, gosh, that's a mess. Yeah.
It really is a mess, you know, and I often have clients contact me and say, oh, we just wanted to call you up and quickly ask, is there anything we should think about before we get married? And what I would love to say to them is, congratulations, that's wonderful. I hope everything goes well. But what I say instead is, why don't you set up an appointment and let's get together so that we can carefully think through all the pros and cons and explain this legal uncertain status they're going to be in and whether they're okay with that. Some people are, some people are not. But if people just go and get married, they have no idea until later what the ambiguities are.
Wow.
And that's not true for a straight couple. Straight couples get married and the consequences are the same across the board. It's recognized federally, it's recognized on the state level, and they don't have to worry about if they get transferred to Indiana next year. One of the things they need to check is to figure out if they're still married when they cross the state line.
Mm.
You know, so obviously, this is it's an untenable situation that has to get worked out over time, but I think it's going to take a while because what we have now on the federal level and in many states is the so-called Defense of Marriage Act.
Yes.
You know, the DOMAs.
Yes.
The
yes.
nickname is DOMA.
Yeah.
And that means that undoing this marriage prohibition is all the harder. Some states have even modified their constitutions to forbid same-sex marriage. So to fix that, you now have to go and change a constitution, which is not an easy thing to do. So the barriers that have been set up are, the legal barriers are significant, and breaking down those walls that were built will take time. What could provide a shortcut, in a sense, is if at the federal level there's a federal constitutional ruling saying that same-sex marriage is a civil right, and therefore that the states need to follow suit. And there is this case going on in California right now, the Perry versus Schwarzenegger case, where Ted Olson and David Boies are involved. And we're all holding our collective breath, because this could either go really well or really badly. Really well in the sense that if it goes on appeal and ultimately to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court affirms same-sex marriage as a constitutional right, that could really establish it for the whole country. On the other hand, if it goes up to the Supreme Court and there's a negative result, that would be a tremendous setback that could take a lot of time to undo. Meanwhile, same-sex couples go about their daily lives and are trying to plan their lives and make decisions day to day that make sense, and it's not simple.
No, it isn't. And, you know, when you said that couples call you and say, we're getting married, what do we need to think about? And you want to tell them, let's sit down and talk. That is something that I think we could do a whole show on. What do you need to consider before you have even a civil union?
Oh, certainly. You know, and this is something that I think is so, so important. It saddens me that we have to think this way, but it really is critical. You know, sometimes I think that when something has been denied for so long, the right to marry or to be in a civil union or domestic partnership has been denied for so long, there can be a tendency to say, great, let's do it. This is personal, but it's also a political statement. We want to be married. We want to be in a civil union. But it's not something to do lightly, because often people are unaware of what the consequences are. And it's much wiser to think it through carefully. And often people end up doing some kind of written domestic partnership or prenuptial agreement that clarifies what their rights and responsibilities are.
Yeah. And that's telling me that a lot of times same-gender couples think more about getting married and being together more than I thought, because I know that we make the decision every day when we wake up to be with one another, because there's not a lot keeping us together. But now, we even, with talking with you, I even realize that we think even more about what it means to be together. We can't just, you know, show up at the church and say, let's get married. We have to really think, which is, I think, a good thing.
Yes, you know, as you were saying that, I was thinking, well, it would be really great if all same-sex and all straight couples put a little bit more thought into it and found out what it really means on a legal and other level to make this commitment. You know, so I think there are some benefits to it. The worst scenario, though, is people who have no idea. A client called me up the other day to say that she and her partner are going to Connecticut to get married, and really was just calling to tell me, and just said, oh, okay, so now that we're getting married, next year we can file taxes jointly, right? So then I had to start explaining what I said earlier about the federal level and the state level being different, and she just got very, very quiet and said, I had no idea this was so complicated. We're going to have to talk about this again and think about it. You know.
Well, I might be interested in bringing you back to just to talk about that one particular thing. What do you need to consider if you're open to doing that.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. That's certainly the kind of jigsaw puzzle that I'm trying to put together on a daily basis, and I think it's so important that that information get out there so that people can make good, informed decisions.
Definitely, definitely. But for this show, we're getting a little short on time, so what I always do is give my guests an opportunity to let people know if they want how to get in touch with you.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. There are a couple of ways to get in touch with me. I have a website for my law firm here in Ithaca, New York,
mm-hmm.
and the web address is my last name, which I'll spell. It's www.galdenhuyslaw.com, that's GELDENHUYSLAW.com. And my individual email address is my first name, Mariette, Mariette, at GaldenHeisLaw.com. I can also be reached by phone at 607-273-2272.
That sounds great. And I really do appreciate you being here and sharing a wealth of knowledge about the law and giving us a lot of things to think about.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, good. I'm glad you did. Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
That's it. That's all I have tonight. Thanks for listening, and thanks for telling your friends. All the way in, like I've been saying, it's getting more and more popular, and that's because of you. Thank you. This is All the Way in Radio, and we record live and uncensored. I'm Deborah E. Lake, here to let you know that you can recognize, claim, and live fully in your life. Goodbye, world. Today. Thanks for listening, and remember to live all the way in your life. Until next time, stay connected. Visit DeborahELake.com, and while you're there, sign up to follow on Twitter and Facebook. You'll also be able to download previously recorded programs. And sign up to become a member and get your edition of the brand new All the Way In newsletter. Members also have access to follow-up broadcasts and special discounts. Remember that you can take All the Way In wherever you go through iTunes. If you have any questions or comments, send an email to allthewayin@deborahelake.com. I'd love to hear from you. All the Way In is a production of